What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 90 of Process Potables. We are live following the Sixers win over Atlanta in game two to even the series at 1-1. My name is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Says That, joined by Steve as usual on Twitter at SWJones87. Make sure you follow everything Process Potables, all social media at Process Potables. Steve, we're back home from AC Beer Fest. We had a little bit to drink that weekend. We got a lot off our chest, and I think the main theme from both of us was that people needed to stop being fucking cowards and not overreact to a game that the Sixers very well could have won, and people acted like they got their asses kicked. Other than a four-minute stretch between the first and second quarter, the Sixers won that game by, I believe, 10 points. I think it was like a 14-point swing during that time. So game two, they come out. Tobias Harris attacks Trae Young early. They adjust their defense. Ben takes on the defensive assignment. I just saw Ryan Clark, I believe former NFL safety, Ryan Clark.
Oh, okay.
Tweet, did Ben Simmons play tonight? Well, Steve, I know you watched the game. I ask you this question. Did Ben Simmons play tonight?
No, Ben Simmons did not play basketball tonight.
Oh.
He played the role of a fucking a jailhouse motherfucking officer, man.
He ran the penitentiary.
Yeah, he just put that shit on lockdown. And I'm going to be honest, I was before the game, I was very back and forth. I'm like, okay, should we really have Ben one-on-one on Trae Young? Because that's the prevailing theory, but it's, you know, I could see a lot of issues with that, but... he fucking locked them down, son.
Yeah, I don't know how you watch that game and don't think that Ben Simmons played. Yeah, he didn't score a whole ton of points. I'm sorry, is this new?
Yeah.
Is this new to anybody that that's not what he does? Why do you need him to score points when you have the guy who should have won MVP, not the guy who did win MVP, the guy who should have won MVP, dropped 40 fucking points. The first Sixer to do it since Allen Iverson.
Yeah. And Trae Young put up, I think, 21, like a pedestrian
21. Yeah, 21, because he literally just needed to lead the team so that no one could say that Kevin Huerter outscored him.
Yeah, and sure, you know, Trae Young can hit it from the logo and just get some ridiculous shots and even calls at that. But, I mean, that dude cannot play a lick of fucking defense.
No,
He can't. He can't stop Ben, you know, on that end either. I mean, no one really can.
And honestly, I mean, even if he was a good defender for his size is the story in all of this. And it's something we talked about going into the series was the Sixers' size was going to matter. And unfortunately, when they came out in the first quarter of game one, they weren't using their size to their advantage. Second quarter, they started to realize that's what they had to do. Second half, we saw them do it a ton. Tonight, they went back to it over and over again, using their size to their advantage, bullying a much smaller Atlanta team, a team that can't go as deep. Again, you saw that like their bench honestly played pretty well tonight, but it was still mainly it was Kevin Huerter, it was Danilo Gallinari, and a little bit of Lou Williams. I mean, that's really it. So again, we've mentioned before that they really only go like seven deep, and great, those two guys played really well, but it's not enough against a Sixers team that pulled Shake Milton out their ass tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, he torches them for 14 of the fastest points I've ever seen.
Shake Milton, who we've never said anything bad or judgmental.
No. No, that's a lie. We slandered him, and now he responded.
Because bullying works.
So, no, we're not going to say that we didn't say anything. We absolutely did say something.
It's what I like to call tough love. You know, exactly. Some people just need that.
When you love somebody, sometimes you have to tell them that they fucking suck.
Yeah.
And tell them to figure it out. You know what doesn't fucking suck, Steve? This beer that we're drinking. God. Kelly Green Brewing put this out for their 5-year anniversary. I happen to grab 2 4-packs as well as go and drink it myself. Double Blue Raz Marshmallow Gelato, which.
Dude.
It sounds like a lot, but it's really not. Like, Steve, talk to me about drinking this beer.
Well, again, what's, I guess in a way it could be kind of misleading, because if you really like gelato and marshmallows like I do, I mean, I don't quite taste that, but it's still magical. Like, I mean, it's called the Blue Raz. It's almost like, you know, like the Blue Gatorade. Like, it's not a flavor. Like, it's just like, it's the flavor's blue.
Like
this
like
beer, the flavor's the blue and it's good.
Like the Office, you got all the Powerades. What flavor is it? Blue. Blue's not a flavor. Oh, Blue Mountain Blast. Oh, Blue Mountain Blast. Put that in the cup holder.
Yeah. It's just blue and it's good. Like, you know.
Yeah, so the way I describe this is it kind of tastes to me like melted blue raspberry water ice.
That's a good,
And then you get a little bit of the lactose just to smooth it out. So even though it's a sour, it doesn't have a lot of bite at the end. It clears from the palate. For a beer with this much flavor and this many things going on, like, the flavor is great, but then, like, it doesn't leave a taste in your mouth. Like, it immediately dissipates, and you're on to whatever you're doing next.
But, yeah, and you're much bigger on the lactose than I generally am. But, I mean, for a beer like this, it does it really well.
Yeah. I definitely agree. So, Kelly Green, who we've talked about a lot on here, Pittman, New Jersey, an incredible brewery. We've done an episode there before. Would love to get back there soon. Love those guys. And, again, happy 5th anniversary to them. Fantastic beer. So, I don't know if there's any left. I know they had it at AC Beer Fest, so they must have, at least on tap, you might be able to go get it. I'm not so sure about cans. They probably went pretty quick. But
I don't know about you, but there is part of me that almost felt guilty. Like, at least half the beers we drank were things we had before. It's like, oh, this is like the opportunity to try a bunch of new stuff, but it's like...
You're talking about at AC Beer Fest?
Yeah. But like, when you got hits like this or like a Bourbon County, like, listen, you're not going to not.
It's our brand.
Yeah.
You know, something we do on here is we drink beer. So by design, we've had a lot of them. But this one definitely stood out to me. Wanted to make sure that we talked about, because I'm not sure if I had actually featured it on an episode yet. I don't know. But we are now. We're celebrating tonight, celebrating the series, getting back to 1-1. It's always been Sixers and six. Could be Sixers and five. I don't know. They answered a lot of questions tonight. And again, I think that as frustrating as game one was, like, get that out of your system. You know, let them hit all their shots. Let you remember, you know, let you have to realize that you have to be physically dominant, that you have to bully them. And you went through all that. It's unfortunate you cough up game one, but look, Embiid has now dropped 39 and 40 in his last two after being diagnosed with a minor meniscus tear. Mm-hmm. So, listen, I'm sure it hurts. I'm sure there's going to be a point where we have to talk about it a little bit more. But right now, best case scenario, guy's playing amazing. Yeah. My favorite part was early in the game, he got switched on the Trey. And he followed Trey all the way out to the arc and same thing Ben was doing, put him in jail. And it's like, this guy's a torn meniscus. Yeah. He's 7 feet tall with a torn meniscus, and he's putting Trey Young in jail on the perimeter. It's unheard of.
Yeah. And the only thing, I mean, we don't want to go, you know, too much in game one, especially with winning game two tonight. But, I mean, it sucked with, you know, the whole Triple H coming out and the DX theme. Like, that was pumped. And then
I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, so and then, you know, like, game one was just, you know, for a lot of same reasons you just mentioned, it was the perfect storm of, again, just another really, really shitty game of officiating. Atlanta was just hitting some of the dumbest, most ridiculous shots that, you know, whether they were defending it well or not at the time of that possession, they were just falling. And we just looked like a team that had been off for almost an entire week. Like, I mean, at least Embiid was, but I mean, they're probably shaking, you know. Definitely what was encouraging, though, is why I don't want to harp too much on game one is with how they finished. And again, that's a similarity carried into tonight's game where we finished strong yet again, especially our bench, because we got nothing, you know, really from our bench last game. And I'm just starting to see, I don't know about you, this theme of, you know, the Hawks that are come out shooting or hot or they're just running and gunning. And then it just seemed like they run out of gas once the third quarter starts.
And it's when you look at the Hawks game, I mean, honestly, this was a story. Not even a lot of people talked about how well they shot in game one, which they definitely did. But They still shot almost 37% from three tonight. They still shot just shy of 46% from the field. I mean, their shots went in, 15 of 18 from the line. The difference tonight, 17 turnovers by them. And when you look at the Sixers, Danny Green, two steals. Joel Embiid, two steals. Ben Simmons, two steals. George Hill, two steals. Like, the defensive intensity is really what it was. And it's not even necessarily so much of contesting the shots because, again, like, I think that it, even if Atlanta shoots, you know, 37% from three for the series, the rest of the series, I think you're okay.
Yeah.
The thing is you've got to force turnovers. And they did a good job talking about it on the TNT broadcast for all the things that I didn't think that they did well, like not being able to identify a trust the process chant at this point. How many fucking years has it been? You talk about how long the process was. You don't understand the one chant we've been doing for the entire time of it. But I digress. What the hell were we talking about?
Oh, defensive intensity.
Yeah,
that's tough.
So, as long as you're forcing the turnovers, because we saw what happened with the Sixers in the first quarter of the first game, was they were the one commanding the turn. I think they had like nine turnovers in the first quarter or something. So, they protected the ball. In this one, the Sixers only had seven turnovers.
That's encouraging.
So, you control the ball. You take the ball away from them. TNT talked about making the other guys on Atlanta be playmakers and not finishers. That's how they described it. So you've basically forced Trae Young out of a facilitator role, out of a playmaker role. You don't let him drive and kick. You don't let him throw lobs. And you force a guy like Bogdanović to be a playmaker, to be a guy that has to find somebody else. You saw them have a lot of miscues on passes, those guys having to be the ones making the passes rather than Trae Young, because Trae Young was magical in game one. All credit to him.
Yeah.
There was that one play he drove baseline, and he had this crazy like wraparound pass, no look from under the net all the way out to the top of the arc. And I think Jackson Frank probably shared it and pointed it out, so credit to him. But it was an unreal pass, and that's just what he was doing the whole time in game one because of the fact that you didn't have the defensive assignment set up properly, because of the fact that Doc Rivers put Danny Green on him for a lot of the game, which obviously everybody was pissed off about. I want to talk to you about Doc Rivers a little bit more, because not only did they make the adjustment, which I feel like, I guess my first question you would be, do you think that Doc would have made the change and put Ben Simmons on Trae Young, even without Ben basically going to the media and saying he wanted it? Because I kind of feel like he forced Doc's hand, and I don't think people talked about it enough that I want to give, like, Doc made the decision, and maybe he would have done it anyway, but I give Ben Simmons a lot of credit for putting the pressure on Doc by going out and saying, I want to guard him, I'm willing to do it. Because, again, this goes back to the Washington series. This goes back to earlier in the season when Bradley Beal torched him and everybody was complaining that Ben Simmons didn't guard him. And it's like, dude, it's not necessarily his choice.
Yeah.
Which, like, is definitely a reality. But at the same time, if you're going to talk about yourself the way Ben Simmons has all year, if you're going to put yourself in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation like Ben Simmons has, both, you know, via him talking and via his play, you do have to kind of put yourself in these situations yourself sometimes. Sometimes you have to call your own number. If you're not going to do it on the offensive end, you have to do it on the defensive end.
Yeah, I sort of think what happened was Doc probably floated the idea in his mind, and then, you know, Ben came out and said, he's like, oh, okay, I'll do it. Okay, we'll see. Maybe, but probably, I don't know yet. And then he probably watched the tape of Danny Green defending Trae Young one-on-one, and he's like, yeah, we got to get Ben Simmons on him. So I think it's definitely a combination of things. And you love hearing that from Ben Simmons. You know, it's interesting, Dan, too, about how a lot of people say how Ben Simmons is a coward because he doesn't shoot. But he's, you know, begging his coach to let him lock down the team's best player. And he's done that, you know, tonight as well as the last series. So, I mean, that's the opposite of the coward. The only difference between tonight's game and game one was that game one, we were chasing the robbers. Tonight, we locked them in jail.
That's right. Yeah, so another change that Doc Rivers made that I want to ask you about, Steve, is we saw Tobias Harris was so hot to start this game. He was carrying the Sixers. They got out to like, I think it was like 18-4 in the first quarter. I mean, they were dominating them. And then there's a little bit of a discourse happening on Sixers Twitter specifically because Tobias was the first sub out. So all the starters remain. I believe it was Matisse that came in for Tobias Harris. And so obviously the reason for this was that you wanted Tobias to come back in with the bench unit, because we talked at the top of the episode about how that all bench unit in game one, from about the 2 minute mark in the first quarter to the 10 minute mark or so in the second quarter, basically cost you the game. So Doc clearly makes the adjustment early, but you do take out the guy that's really carrying the team at that point. And I don't necessarily think that there's a correlation between that and Atlanta getting back in the game. I mean, it was always going to happen. You know, basketball is a game of runs all the time. You're not just going to stay up 20 the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that's still something he's going to have to tinker with, or do you think that that was the answer? Is, you know, regardless of how Tobias plays, whether he continues to come out that aggressive or not, either way, do you think going forward he's going to be a guy that actually gets subbed out pretty early so that he can come back with the bench, or do you think they're going to have to try different things?
I think that's what they're going to have to do because, I mean, once we hired Doc Rivers, the prevailing thought has been, oh, we got the guy who got the best out of Tobias Harris. So if there's one player on a team whose, you know, strategy or decisions I don't question Doc's judgment on, it's Tobias Harris. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I'm not trying to be the, well, I was right guy, but, you know, my biggest fear was Doc being a little too reliant on that second unit, which was okay in the regular season. We saw game one, that was a complete disaster. And I think part of one way of mitigating that is, you know, the bench is going to have to come in and play. You're going to need Matisse. You're going to need Dwight to come in for a few minutes to spell Embiid. You know, you're going to expect guys like George Hill, Furkan, or a Sniper Shake to come in to give you some points. So, but we don't want all those guys out on the floor at the same time. And especially discouraging when they have a player like Trae Young on the bench, you know, and our bench can't sustain a lead. So I think Tobias Harris is going to be the key with that. And looking back with the benefit of hindsight over the regular season, the two things about Tobias Harris, like the two biggest indicators that he's going to have a great game, kind of like how we talked about how he's that silent assassin, is when he has a fast, strong start in the first quarter, and then he also gets a lot of points when he's running that second unit. So I think that's what he's going to have to do, because I would much rather see him taking Tobias out a little early to come back with that bench lineup than to see an entire bench unit.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me a little bit, and I mean, I think as this is kind of a new role for Tobias. Obviously, we saw Doc the whole year do these full bench lineups. So now asking Tobias to run a second unit as well as still start the game is something that I think he'll only get better with the more he has to do it. But, you know, he comes out and has like, 12 or 14 in the fourth quarter, whatever it was. I remember he was 6 of 7, so obviously at least 12. He only finishes the game with 22. So do you think that's just kind of the ebb and flow of the game, or do you think that Doc might have cooled him off a little bit? And while maybe that was your strategy going into it, do you have to see how hot he is and, you know, ride it out a little more? Like, I think that's the only interesting caveat to this conversation in my mind.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Sometimes it's just that's when he gets hot, is at the very beginning of the game. But also, when you talk about ebb and flow, it also seems like a lot of times when he, not that he's missing shots or taking bad shots or whatever, when he just has a drop of, you know, production offensively, that's where it seems like Embiid picks up, the rest of the offense right there. So, I mean, hey, and the big man putting up 40 points today, just that kind of helps when a player like Tobias Harris kind of, you know, trends down offensively throughout the game. So
one of the biggest things that people talked about going into the series and also in game one especially was, you know, we know Embiid now has several seasons of being, you know, him and James Harden are, you know, 1A and 1B as far as getting to the line, drawing fouls and everything. Trae Young has really become that kind of guy too. Now, he still went to the line 9 times in this game, but the Hawks as a team only have 18 free throws, and Embiid alone tonight, 16 free throw attempts. Wow. There was a lot of talk, especially we go back to Ben Simmons saying he's going to draw the assignment of Trae Young. And he even put it out there into the universe about, you know, are the refs going to let me use my size? Are they going to let me be physical? We've seen every time that Matisse Thybulle is on Trae Young, he's getting called for complete bullshit fouls.
Yeah.
Do you think that this game, as far as, you know, the calls, trying to be as unbiased as possible, do you think they mostly got it right? Trae still got to the line 9 times, but obviously, you know, 18 for the Hawks versus 22 for the Sixers, pretty even. But, you know, going to Atlanta now, are you worried that, you know, game 3 could be, you know, going back to Trae getting a lot more calls? Do you think Embiid still gets the same whistle that he got in Philadelphia and Atlanta? Like, do you think the refs are going to unfortunately have a lot to say about this series when we go to game 3 in Atlanta?
Dude, that's really hard to say because I know earlier today a lot of people were panicking when they found out that
Scott Foster and yes, Tony Brothers
and were on Tony the Brothers and. And, you know, as much as we dreaded it, I can see, you know, the NBA will, in a way, admitting, oh, that game one was so horribly officiated. So we're going to send in, you know, two of who they think are, you know, among the best refs in the NBA. It's almost like an overcorrection. I think that's what the league tried to do here, but it was still a horribly called game. And dude, I just don't know what to make of refs anymore. We talked about in the last episode or two about how we've always heard growing up, you know, you're not going to get those calls in the playoffs. And then what happens? Like, they just call the most ticky-tacky falls calls. It's not an even game. And I counted, I think, 3 times that Scott Foster overturned 3 calls by Tony Brothers. And it almost, like, when they overcalled the one on Embiid, initially, it almost seemed like a moment of, you know, two alphas trying to, like, battle out as far as...
Well, no, wasn't correct. That the one that he got wrong twice?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so, I don't know what to make of it. And, I know part of this is because I'm a homer, but... And I haven't watched too many Atlantic Hawk games, and Trae Young's always been a fun guy to watch. But, boy, he gets away with fucking murder with pushing off on that left arm.
Oh, yeah.
And they always talk about – and here's another thing that's, I guess, just not true anymore. They talk about, oh, you have to, you know, earn certain calls or fouls in the playoffs. And Trae Young, this is his first time in the playoffs, and he's already getting away with this bogus shit. Like, it's a complete toss-up. Like, I mean, you would think that, you know, the calls – go a little in their favor going down in Atlanta, but dude, who really knows? It's such a clusterfuck anymore, man.
In the wise words of one of our friends, it is a crapshoot.
It is a crapshoot.
You're right about Trae Young, and the most frustrating thing is because I think a lot of Sixers fans have felt this way. Like, we don't want to have to root against this guy. I don't think anybody really had bad blood for him.
Yeah.
But all the networks, everybody's talking about how, especially with that series with the Knicks, like, he really became a heel. Like, he likes to play the heel role. But you really, like, especially Sixers fans have to know, you got to watch this guy and see a lot of Allen Iverson. And while you talk about guys having to earn calls, unfortunately, as the league has gotten bigger, I think that's one of the reasons you've had to earn calls, because guys are more physical. Trae Young is small. So I think he's getting whistles because of the fact that he's willing to go in, you know, as Mark Zumoff would say, like, amongst the trees.
Yeah. When he's attacking a basket, absolutely. But Iverson could not hit threes like that.
Well, that's no,
a,
but,
yeah, I, but like, I know what you're saying.
Iverson
yeah.
was a different player, obviously,
yeah.
with his mid-range and his aggressive driving and everything.
And Iverson was a bit of a heel, too.
Absolutely. So that's what I mean. So there's a lot of similarities there that you have to appreciate. As we look deeper into the first 2 games here, again, we're talking post-game. Sixers win 118-102 to even the series at 1-1 here on Process Potable. Steve, when we look at Shake Milton, we talked about at the top of the episode a little bit already about his performance, 14 points off the bench, 5 of 8 from the field, 4 of 5 from 3. Tyrese Maxey in this game only plays 5 minutes, 0 points. We had basically kind of decided at this point that Maxey had stolen Shake Milton's role. Yeah. Shake Milton comes out and has a game like this. He didn't even play in the first half. I don't know if it was an underwhelming performance from Maxey in the first half that drew this decision from Doc, or if everyone's just kind of up in the air. At this point,
in the second round, they're still going like 10 to 11 deep. Do you think that this is going to continue to be the case, or do you think at any point Doc is really going to tighten up this rotation?
I think that's going to be the case, man, because I don't really see any signs of him shrinking, you know, down the guys that come and play on the court. And I mean, sure, come, you know, conference finals, NBA finals, maybe he shortens the lineup a little bit. But I mean, there's part, I don't know if this is the case, but I, well, let me backtrack. I did see on Twitter how Doc came out and said that he had a talk with Shake, and Shake was staying longer. He was playing like one-on-one till past 10 o'clock at night last night. So I guess Doc's had some sort of pep talk with him. And, you know, listen, we were both, you know, we've been both disappointed with Shake's performance so far in this playoffs, but a lot of people want to slander Shake because they think he's this really, you know, awful player. And we know that's not the case. Like, he's got the body.
Yeah,
he's
got a lot of him, but we don't think he's terrible.
Right. And I think, like, that's where we draw the line. Like, we know that, man, if he just gets his head screwed on, you know, just right, like, that guy can be a difference maker. And
I think Sixers fans constantly forget that regardless of how he performs in this postseason, like, he is a long-term piece for this team.
Yeah, he's going to be here no matter what.
His contract's too valuable. He's a big body. He's got the wingspan that they like in their guards. You know, he can obviously shoot. He's got some playmaking. He's got some, like, he brings so much to the table that you can't give up on that. You know, if it means he's not getting run in the conference final and the finals, it's one thing. Like, that'll happen. But he's absolutely going to be in the rotation next year, no matter how bad he plays right now. So, like, people were getting crazy about
and
writing him off. Like, it felt like long-term already.
And I also wonder, you know, with how many games Doc has coached in the playoffs, I mean, part of me has to think that he probably has sat back and realized, look, okay, Tyrese has played some, you know, great minutes, you know, scored the ball at times at will, and he probably is, you know, he probably realizes that he's sort of on borrowed time with Tyrese, knowing that he's a rookie and he has to have, you know, a plan B for, obviously, that being Shake Milton. And listen, if the rest of the playoffs goes, you know, having to go back and forth with, you know, each of them, that's fine. And hell, if they both play great together at the same time, even better. But I also wonder if Doc kind of like foresee that happening.
Well, until that point, I definitely agreed with you. And I think it's a good, again, we've talked about the bench a lot in this way. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
You have all these guys, and it seems like as soon as one guy stops getting hot, another guy's like, oh, this is my chance, and takes advantage of it. You know, you talk about it across all sports, like competition in your own building, in your own gym, you know, whatever sport it is, on your own turf, like, it's good. Like, you don't want guys to get complacent.
Yeah, it's kind of like the, I can't believe I'm saying a hockey analogy here, but it's like going with the hot hand, you know, as with your goalie. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just what you kind of have to do here with your guys on the bench.
Yeah. And, you know, not to get off topic, but I saw something today as far as the Eagles go about Travis Fulgham. And I think it was like the Eagles receiver coach or whatever. And he was talking about how Alshon Jeffrey basically took Fulgham's job last year. And they were like, he basically got complacent. He wasn't watching enough film. He wasn't realizing how defense were attacking him because he had that like 4-week stretch where he led the NFL in yards.
Yeah, I bought a freaking shirt.
And we were all like, what the fuck happened? Like, why is this guy not playing anymore? And like, it seemed like it was basically like, I think it might, you know, a young guy who has all that talent finally gets his shot and is blowing the doors off the place, you know, lets it get to his head and then takes his foot off the gas and isn't working as hard. And obviously, like we see in any sport, when you're the new guy and teams don't have, you know, the book on you, you have a lot of success, then they figure you out. And if you don't learn how to adapt once they make that first change and figure out how to handle you, you see careers end.
Yeah.
For the guys that don't figure that out. Look at Dom Brown.
Who?
Exactly.
Well, everyone who's saying that he had one season was really 1 month he had.
That was a great point. I think that was our dude Chris. That really pointed that out.
I also feel like our friend Ben may have tweeted that once or twice.
Maybe.
Ben Schroeder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, Ben definitely knows Phillies, so.
Yeah.
Steve, obviously off the win, not concerned about very much. There are some red flags, and the biggest one is really bad for our brand because it's Danny Green.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked all season about he's a veteran, he's a champion, these are the times that you are going to need him the most. He's playing pretty poorly. Yeah. Are you letting that get to you, or are you still comfortable with him and you think he's earned the right to get the bounce back from this?
I think he's definitely earned the right to get the bounce back, and he'll definitely get the benefit of the doubt just with his experience that comes with him. I mean, I'm not really, really concerned, but I'm starting to worry just a tad bit, because if we don't have Danny Green in that lineup, I mean, his production, or at least what we're used to seeing out of Danny Green, will be very difficult to replace. And I mean, nowadays, I mean, Tyrese is definitely a better defender than Danny Green is anymore, but...
I'm sorry, Tyrese is a better defender than Danny Green?
Oh my God, Matisse. Okay. It's past my bedtime.
Fair enough.
But good call.
That's why I'm making
sure. Good catch, yeah. But I mean, Matisse, man, he can't play a lick of offense, and right. that's what's scary. And
it's looking really bad in this series too. He's making me nervous.
Yeah, so it's twofold. Not only what, you know, Danny Green falling, but also, you know, finding that replacing his production is going to be really difficult.
Matisse played the most minutes of anybody who wasn't a starter.
Oh, wow.
Almost 24 minutes. How many shots do you think he took?
One.
Two.
Yeah.
Two shots, 0-1 from three, 0-1 at the line, two points.
And you know, I'm okay with him taking wide open looks from three. Because
that's what I mean. He has to fucking shoot.
Yeah, no one on Atlanta scares me defensively.
But we've talked about this, the difference between him and Ben Simmons. I don't want Ben Simmons to take shots pretty much at all if he's not good with it. I want Matisse Thybul to shoot.
Yeah.
He's a better shooter than Ben Simmons.
Oh, yeah.
He's a capable shooter, and you're going to get better by doing it. I can't have a guy who plays 24 minutes take two shots.
Yeah, that's not good.
Like, you know that for the most of the season, I was kind of like hey, he's got to figure his offense out. And then he got so good at defense that at least in the regular season, I said, okay, you're playing him regardless.
Yeah.
Two shots in 24 minutes in a playoff game, I don't care how good you are at defense. It can't happen.
Yeah, especially when you're coming in for Danny Green, who's just not making shit.
Right. Well, I guess it's the only way to make it justifiable for him is, hey, if Danny's not hitting either, then don't you want the better defender? Like you said, he's a better defender right now than Danny Green is. I absolutely agree with you. So if they both can't shoot for shit, then yeah, I guess Matisse gets the spot. But unfortunately, like, There was a certain stretch in this game where it reminded me too much of that Jimmy Butler stretch in the Toronto series, where we had those three straight possessions with like two shot clock violations and a turnover, where all of a sudden it felt like everybody was afraid to shoot. And that's what's frustrating. You already have Ben Simmons, who's afraid to shoot. Ben only takes three shots the whole game, 0-2 from the line. Matisse Thybul only takes two shots and misses his only free throw attempt. Like, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And you're lucky that Seth Curry goes 5 of 6 from three. You're lucky that Shake Milton comes in and goes 4 or 5 off the bench. Like, Seth we're used to, and Seth's having an incredible postseason. The fact that you traded him for Josh Richardson for him straight up is still
mind-boggling.
I don't like the trades that Daryl Morey has pulled off are just like he's gotten a lot of credit. Let's not, you know, make it out like we're saying anything new that people aren't aware of, but holy shit. You pull Danny Green in a trade that you get out of the Al Horford deal. You trade Josh Richardson for Seth Curry straight up. I mean, it's magical.
Oh, speaking of, are we going to talk about Daryl Morey's fine for the quote-unquote anti-tampering?
Yeah, well worth it.
Yeah.
Get another one for Dame, honestly.
Yeah, seriously.
Do the same thing. I'm fine with it.
$75,000, that's chump change for him. Not my money.
So, Steve, what if you're the Hawks... You're going home 1-1, which honestly is probably the best case for you.
Yeah,
you know, you're the five seed playing the one seed, and you stole one in Philadelphia. Considering how close it got at the end, you absolutely can call that a steal. So you steal one in Philadelphia, you have home court advantage now. If you're Atlanta, you know, what changes do you think they can make to what Philadelphia did tonight that they could take advantage of at home, or do you think that? You know, what the Sixers did tonight is just, if they keep that up, there's not really a punch back from Atlanta that could necessarily, you know, get them the series.
Honestly, I can't really think of a quote-unquote punch back where they can kind of match how the Sixers played tonight. I think the biggest thing so far is that, you know, one of the biggest differences between Game 1 and Game 2 was that Atlanta's game is the pick and roll, and we could not defend that shit at all game one. Tonight was a different story. Now, I'm curious if maybe they try different matchups, different players, you know, picking or rolling for others. That's one way that Trae Young gets to the foul line as well. So, and the other thing I just, you know, it's hard to fathom because, like we've said, they're only really going seven deep, and I don't expect anyone else beyond, you know, Gallinari or Herder coming in and providing any kind of significant production, man. Like, I mean, when you're down to an aging Lou Williams and Tony Snell, who only lasted 5 seconds into the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And, I mean, Clint Capella is a nice player, but he's, you know, a lot of those rim-running guys are very limited.
And well, and Bede's the worst-case scenario for
yes,
him.
Yes, so.
Capella can be, was a great weapon for them against New York, who didn't have a true center. Obviously, Mitchell Robinson has been injured for basically the entire second half of the season,
yeah.
So he wasn't available. Everybody talked about Nerlens Noel, and I'm sorry, like, I still don't get the Nerlens Noel thing. Like, he's a player.
Yeah,
he's a nice bench center, but like people were still talking about offering him like real money about how, like, I don't think that guy can start in the NBA. I'm sorry, I just don't see.
Oh,
it.
No,
maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's because of that 5-year $70 million deal he rejected from the Mavericks. People think there's still that value there. But
sure. Oh no, he fucked up not taking that. If you ask
yeah,
me,
yeah, man,
but. Yeah, I mean, Capella it can only do what he does. And honestly, my favorite thing was that he finally got the pick and roll going with Trae Young. Trae Young threw a lob up to him, and the next play down the court, Embiid drew him his second foul. So get this, go sit down, dude. I don't feel like dealing with this tonight.
He fucking
as long as Embiid can manage his meniscus, I think this series is over. My biggest fear that I hate that I'm even saying it, but it's just a reality. My biggest fear is that, you know, the plane to Atlanta doesn't do well for his knee, and he like sits game three to like try to get right for the rest of the series, and then you inevitably cough it up and start playing from behind, which I still think that's the only reason I think it could go six. I mean, if Embiid plays the next three, I think it's over.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
I really do. I think the only reason it goes six is Embiid takes a game off because he says, listen, like, you give me one and I can win us the next three. But if you don't, then, like, I could be limited out there. But, again, when you look at his performance tonight, it's pretty fucking hard to imagine that he can't, that, like, even if his knee's more sore in the next game, oh, what does that mean? He drops 30 and 10 instead of 40 and 12? Like, oh, no.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that he's on a nice chartered airplane with lots of room, and they're not giving him the Andre the Giant treatment where he has to sit and coach with like a bunch of strangers.
You know what? But you know what I have to say? I didn't plan on talking about this, but I'm going to fucking say it.
Okay, say it.
If fucking Meek Mill, Jay-Z, and Michael Rubin could buy Robert Kraft a fucking custom Bentley so that he can fucking get buried in it in a couple months when he drops dead, then put Joel Embiid on a goddamn private jet to Atlanta by himself with three fucking, I don't know, physical therapists to just, like, work that fucking knee the whole way. Get somebody
to
rub
it. Tub.
Get somebody to ice
airplane.
It. Get somebody to heat it. Like, do whatever you have to do. Like, I'm so, this is fucking crazy. You're telling me that coming home from, was it Washington that they came home from and the plane broke down and they had to take a bus?
Oh, God, wherever. Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of here. All the people around this team have so much goddamn money.
Yeah, billionaires.
I don't understand. So if you're going to buy a guy who fucks underage Asian girls a fucking Bentley, then I think you need to get Joel Embiid enough room to fly comfortably.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm asking for a lot.
Imagine being a billionaire in your 80s and you just get your dream car. Like, bro, go fuck yourself.
Imagine,
like,
being a billionaire and imagine making enough money to fucking live.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to.
Yeah,
it's not.
No, that was necessary.
It was absolutely necessary. Yeah. Steve, anything else? Game three is Friday. Game four is, do you know?
Game four is Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll probably do a pod on Monday.
I saw some Furkan hate, and I just want people to let you know.
Listen,
it's
had
okay.
A terrible game.
He had a terrible game. He didn't come back in the game. And if you think that's bad, Watch one season of Matt Harpering on the Sixers, and you'll feel good. Oh yeah, talk about a name drop, right?
So the one thing I'll say, again, bad game. Very bad game. He got put out there at a point where he was out there when nobody wanted to shoot, and he had to chuck. And honestly, that's the one thing you have to give him is that if he's on the floor, you're not going to have a fucking shot clock violation. He missed poorly. They were bad shots. But that's what it is. And it goes back to our point about Shake, about Tyrese. You can include Furkan in this group. Listen, based off tonight, you might not see Maxey or Furkan in the next game. And that's fine. But Danny Green has another clunker. You're going to see things change. If Shake Milton gets the first shot off the bench and doesn't start delivering in the next game, you're going to see Tyrese Maxey in the second half. If Matisse keeps going out there and not shooting, you could see more Furkan Korkmaz. Again, I think it's a good problem to have. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that Doc is going to continue to ride the hot hand, and he's going to continue to let people know, like, if you don't perform, you're going to sit.
Yeah.
And just because you play in the first half doesn't mean you'll play in the second half. And just because you didn't play in the first half doesn't mean I won't call your number in the second half.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah.
Everyone's got to be ready, and everyone's got to earn their keep. And I'm fine with that. I think that's the way you're supposed to do it, man.
Yeah.
Like, there's no loyalty. Like to some extent, especially, like, for starters, yeah, a little bit. But, again, even with the way that we've been behind Danny Green for most of the season, dude, you keep playing like this, and, you know, you're at least going to start dropping minutes. And when you look at what they did, I mean, Danny Green, 25 minutes and 50 seconds. I mean, that's pretty low.
Yeah.
Especially in the playoffs.
Listen, it's business, not personal at this time of the year.
Correct. See, my last question for you before we go. Because this was something people were talking about on Twitter as well. So I just want to get your take. This game was pretty close for the most part. Atlanta came back, so like it wasn't like a game where the fourth quarter. I mean, they were up a lot at the beginning of the fourth, and you thought the Stars maybe wouldn't come back. And then Atlanta was just kind of hanging that like 15-point range. So Doc brought them in just to make sure, which I'm fine with. But still, at the same time, when you look at the minutes for the big three, especially Harris, Embiid, and Simmons, they're really still at their regular season numbers. Tobias played just under 37, and Embiid played just under 35, and Ben played just under 35. And you could argue that they didn't even need to do that, that like Doc ran them pretty deep into the fourth. You know, they were still out there at about the three-minute mark when they were, again, back up closer to 20. Like, the game was over. Do you think at any point Doc is actually going to stretch these guys to closer to 40? I mean, a lot of people were saying, like, hey, Doc, it's the playoffs. Like, run your starters more. But, again, they just beat the Hawks by 16 and still didn't have to play anybody except Tobias Harris more than 35 minutes. Do you think that, again, the same way we talk about the bench rotation and going this deep, do you think that he's going to continue to not overplay his stars, or do you think, especially, you know, the way Brooklyn's playing right now, let's say, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but you see them in a conference final, do you think that that's definitely the kind of time, based on how much Durant and Kyrie especially are playing right now, do you think that he will actually stretch the starters to kind of match that?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I mean, when you compare Washington to Atlanta, and then you compare Atlanta to Brooklyn or Milwaukee, I mean, the drop-off just is...
Of course.
Yeah, so I think... Yeah, when it comes to, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, especially since the core guys who have been on this team haven't been that far, I mean, that's when you're going to see that change. And I expect to see that from Doc. If not, I'm going to be a little concerned.
No, absolutely. I think that's fair. And I think I agree with you. I think that when push comes to shove, he will play them more. And I think especially with Embiid, obviously you're trying to be as cautious as you can. But... you know, I think that Tobias and Ben, I've been saying for, you know, months now, like those guys can play 40, no problem. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, they can't. I think it's a matter of he still doesn't feel like they necessarily have to, and maybe he wants to make sure that once they're asked to do so that they haven't already been run into the ground. You know, like a Tom Thibodeau coach team. Mm-hmm. Tom Thibodeau who just won Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Fucking egregious, man. I'm not saying, and I'm not even saying that because I thought Doc should win it, but holy shit, man. Like,
yeah.
It was not Tom Thibodeau, I'll tell you that.
It seems like if they're, you know, these two games, I mean, we talked about beforehand. It's funny how similar they are in that Thibodeau runs his teams down because of the defending, you know, his defensive scheme, whereas Nate McMillan just seems like he has these guys going guns blazing and they're just too fucking tired to shoot. at the end of the game. Like, and
well, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the Sixers imposing their will finally, which again,
yeah, I mean, jail will do that to you.
Jail will do that to you. And it's unfortunate because we saw, you know, the first quarter of game one that they just weren't doing that. And Atlanta was hitting every shot and getting open looks. And boy, look at how things change when you do the same thing you've been doing to have your success all season.
How about it's like that?
They totally forgot who they were. It's unfortunate. It cost them a game. Hopefully it doesn't come back to bite them. But, you know, tonight being any indicator, doesn't look like that'll be the case. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you tuned in on Twitch, especially appreciate it. The video of this will be on YouTube, so if you're listening to the podcast version of this but want to watch us drink beer and be a little bit more animated, you can absolutely do so. You look up Process Potables on YouTube. We're there. All social media at Process Potables for Steve. I'm Dan. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will do another pod after Game 4 on Monday night, so stay tuned and trust the podcast. Thank you.